canı Allah, illallah, illallah.
We're in Kabardina, Balkaria, a breathtaking mountainous region where the unique traditions of the people here run as deep as the valleys and gorges. So join us to find out how the rich local culture shines through the clothes, crafts, and dances that have been passed down from generation to generation. Galimat, the kafa seems to stand out among all the Caucasian dances. What makes it so special?
The kafa is the pride, the face and the treasure trove of our Caucasian culture. It's the soul of the Caucasians. The dance is performed by couples surrounded by a circle of supporting dancers. Before, the kafa was the dance of a Caucasian princess. It was only performed by nobility. While everybody can dance it these days, all its traditions are still observed. The kafa hasn't changed over centuries, which is why it has such historical value. We dance it today exactly as our forefathers did a very long time ago.
To my untrained eye, it seems a bit like a contradictory dance, because on the one hand, you have this rather energetic, upbeat music, and you expect the dancing itself to be energetic, but it's actually quite measured and calm. What's the reason behind that?
The reason behind that is our different personalities. A man's temperament is different from a woman's. You're talking about energetic music and measured, calm movements. Men are noble, proud, restrained, while girls are graceful and exquisite.
I see in a lot of the Caucasian dances there's this vigorous clapping. What does that represent?
If we search back in history, we see that this is a part of a pagan ritual. People would clap their hands to protect the dancing couple, those two beautiful people, from the evil eye and dark powers.
I also see that in many of the Caucasian dances, the dancing couples rarely come into physical contact. Why is that as well?
When dancing the kafa, it's considered inappropriate for the young man to touch the girl. Sharp movements or turns are also not allowed, because that would be seen as a sign of disrespect. The girl could take offence, and such behaviour often resulted in a feud over what was seen as an insult. This is a reflection of our people's character and customs.
Every gesture, every step has its own meaning in Kabardino-Balkaria's traditional dance, but it's the costumes that complete the image. So let's dive into the art of creating these outfits and find out what makes them so special.
Madina, there are some striking similarities between the men's costumes and the women's. They seem to complement each other very well. I take it that's not by accident.
Gender equality is still latently present in the Caucasus. The Caucasian costume is not the same as Eastern or Slavic costumes. It has its own philosophy. The cut of the dress reflects a conceptually distinct approach where a woman is not seen as, shall we say, different. The idea behind the cut of men's and women's costumes in the Caucasus remains the same. The costume is both simple and complex. It's complex because it has many parts and garments. One set of men's or women's clothing includes clothes for wearing around the house, work clothes, formal wear, etc. Yet the most important thing about this costume is that it resembles a military tunic. In the Caucasus, the woman stands close to her man, but is slightly behind him. So archetypically, this woman is a mother of the next generation of warriors. She will bring up her sons as future defenders. These sleeve pendants immediately catch the eye. They were the signature feature of each dress. Initially, these patterns were not decorative, but had symbolic meaning. This sign means the tree of life. We were all born in the era of the tree of life, and now we're transitioning into the digital paradigm. This is an important symbol for us. The central part here symbolizes a plowed field or parts of the world. Next, we see a grain that's taken root, which turns this whole thing into a tree. We see horn-shaped ornaments, which are latently zoomorphic. This anthropomorphic shape of the ornament as a whole implies the continuation of life. As a result, this tree tells us about the number of families, how many budding new lives there are, and so on. On the one hand, the design decorates the dress. On the other, it's actually the main idea behind it.
Uh-huh. Well, talking about women, Madina, I've noticed that in a lot of the women's dresses, they have these sort of elongated, almost wing-like features. What are they for?
The male costume often features elongated sleeves as well, albeit for an entirely different purpose. This is an authentic chokha, by the way. The cuff is supposed to cover the wrist when the hand points down. A man's wrist is meant to hold weapons or reins when riding a horse. It's another world. But there are times when these elements all come together during a dance and choreography. The Adigs have a circle dance where women can't touch the men's wrists with their bare hands. And the elongated sleeves serve not as battle wear, but rather as a cover so that the women can place their hands there for the ritual dance. Young people would meet and get to know each other when doing this dance, but they wouldn't touch each other.
Madina, you've already mentioned the gender equality between men and women, but did the clothing differ depending on social status and age?
Of course, this is a very important factor for all ethnic groups. The sleeve pendant also served to indicate the social status of the wearer. Other socially significant elements of women's clothing included tall hats and the choice of colors. The color is a very powerful indicator of the wearer's age and social rank. The same applies to male costumes. Men, however, were very limited in their range of colors available. It would just be brown, reddish brown, or cream. The lighter the shade, the younger the wearer, or the higher the status. Women would wear the colors of ripe fruit. Over time, those colors would get darker, progressing from, say, the color of ripe cherries to the color of ripe plums.
Can you talk me through the design features of the burqa? It's this huge cloak made from dense wool with broad shoulders. It doesn't strike me as the most comfortable thing to wear, but it must be functional.
What's a Caucasian burqa? It's a man's home. Back in the day, men rode horses a lot. They were always on the move. Their horses were like their avatars, an extension of the rider, while their burqas were a home away from home. You can put a burqa upright on the ground, and it'll stand on its own. It can protect you from the rain or the sun. Sometimes their wearers used them as a makeshift table to serve a feast to their friends, fellow travelers, or the people they met on the road. So it was a house, a table, and a shelter.
Hello, Asya. Peter.
Asya.
Nice to meet you. Can you show me how you turn this wall here into this magnificent burqa behind us?
I'm going to guide you through the whole process from shearing to the finished burqa.
And is this a specific type of wool from a local sheep, or will any sort of wool do?
There's a special breed of sheep. It's called Karachay Balkar. And shearing should be done in the fall.
And why is that?
I don't know why. I can't explain. But wool sheared in the fall is nicer to work with. We begin by washing the wool. Then we skirt the fleece, removing small bits of dirt, etc.
Can I help you?
Sure.
Thank you.
Give it a try.
And you just do this?
Like this.
And how long does it take to process this raw wool and turn it into a burqa?
There are many steps in the process. Roughly speaking, it takes about a month.
A month? Really? And why so long?
Because heavy felt takes several days to dry, and there are several felting processes. It requires long and labor-intensive work.
And is that one of the reasons why it's such a treasured and expensive present?
Of course. It's a very precious gift for the Balkars. A lot of work goes into making a burqa.
So how am I doing? Is this better? To Lucha? Ilish?
Yes, you're doing a good job. Thanks for your help. After skirting...
You've done so much more than me.
Sure. I have more experience. Then we pass the wool through a special machine, which turns it into a fabric, like this one.
How come the color's different?
Because we fed both white and black wool through the same machine, so the resulting fabric is gray. It's a mix of the two colors.
And what's the next step?
Then we spread it carefully. It should be flat.
It's so soft, yes.
It's very soft, yes. Remove any excess bits, black bits. We need a uniform color.
So what do we do now with these?
We're going to start felting now. We'll need hot water.
Uh-huh. And what does the water do to the wool?
Hot water and soap help wool fibers become interlocked.
Mm-hmm. But to make a burqa like this, you'll need obviously a lot more wool than this, Asya.
Yes, sure. Mm. It would take between 7 and 10 kilograms of wool.
7 to 8 kilograms?
Yes.
And how much do we have here, roughly?
No more than 300 or 400 grams.
Oh, really? And what does this step do to the wool, Asya?
The wool turns into cloth. We're going to start felting now, and you're going to help. Let's go.
It's like rolling a huge piece of dough.
Yes.
Is it quite physical work, this, Asya?
This is hard work, yes. Labor intensive.
How long do we have to do this for?
About 10 to 15 minutes each time. Then we're going to straighten out the creases.
And how long have you been making burqas for, Asya?
Since I was a little girl. We would help our mother. Now, let's take a look.
I bet your half is better than my half.
We'll see. Okay. Now?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's turning into felt.
It's a lot denser.
Yes, it's true.
And is it true that the wool is woven so tightly in a burqa that a sword or a saber can't cut it?
A genuine Balkar burqa is watertight. It protects against the cold.
So it's like a form of armor as well?
Against everything.
No Circassian man is complete without his trusty dagger or kinjal, a symbol of honor and dignity. For decades now, blacksmith Khamzat Bachiev has been turning raw steel into exquisite masterpieces. Let's find out how he does it.
Wow. Khamzat, lovely to meet you. What does the dagger mean for the peoples of Kabardino-Balkaria? And does this affect the way that you make it?
This dagger is a symbol of the Caucasus. It's a man's attribute, a sign of freedom and honor. If you wore a dagger, you were free. And freedom is the most precious thing in the Caucasus. A dagger made you feel like a real man. With it at your side, you couldn't stoop to inappropriate behavior. Many writers wrote about the dagger, and many poets dedicated poems to it. Kaysin Kuliyev, the great son of the Karachay-Balkar people, wrote a poem where he said, "Forged by masters, you served good and evil. For that, mothers in the villages both blessed and cursed you."
How long does it take you to make a kinjal from the very beginning, from a raw piece of metal to the finished, beautiful, intricate product at the end?
It depends. First of all, on the blacksmith's age. I could probably do it faster when I was a young man. Today, if I really put my heart into it, it would take me 2 months of hard work.
For one dagger, 2 months.
I work with multi-layer steel, which means several different steel grades are welded together using forge welding. I start out with 11 plates, and I end up with 891 layers. That's my technology. Many steel grades don't work well in this atmospheric pressure in the mountains. There are people who can't function well at high altitude. The same is true of metals. During forge welding, the temperature in the forge reaches 1,500 degrees, at the very least. It's very hard standing next to it at arm's length. But the pleasure you get from this work is worth all of the pain.
Really?
You have to let this heat travel through you to make a finished piece. You need to transform yourself if you want a great result. You need to become fire and metal. This is my stamp. It's a lynx. People used to say that the angel of death appeared in the shape of a lynx. That's our belief. So our hunters were afraid to shoot a lynx. If you killed a lynx, you were supposed to wear its nails on you at all times. That's why I chose this symbol.
Do you mind if I have a look? Oh, it's beautiful.
Hold it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we need to prepare everything. Like this. We're going to heat it and then apply it like this. Now to remove the scale. We put it here. Hold this. Place it on top. Now watch where it lands if it flies off. Here.
And that's it. That's done now.
Perfect.
Your logo's been imprinted on it. Hamzat, you talk with such passion about your work, or your art, I'd call it, and I've seen your mastery myself. I take it you have no plans to retire anytime soon.
It's not a job. It's more like a disease. You're infected by it. And the only cure is the forge and the metal. I've loved metal since childhood. You can't become a specialist. You need to be born a specialist. It's hard to do what you don't like doing. But when you're doing what you love, it's never hard. A person has to find their true calling in the world. Allah guides by giving us mastery or skill. And we should always trust that guidance. You should live your life so that when you look back, you have no regrets. Live for others. Do nice things for them. If everyone lived that way, your good deeds go full circle and come back to you. But unfortunately, we're conscious beings. And we consciously do bad things. May Allah make it so that whatever we say, things turn out all right in the end.
How do the dancers here in the Caucasus embody the outlook of the people here?
When you see the kafa in particular, you will know our people's character and many of our traditions, such as respect for women, for guests, for our elders and for men. When you were watching the kafa, you saw a circle dancing around the couple. You might think that the circle dancers are positioned randomly, but that's not the case. In fact, it's highly structured. In the circle dance, the girls occupy a place of honour and their positions depend on their age. The boys facing them are also positioned according to their age. There is another tradition. You can't participate in the Cherkasin games if you have an older sibling, even if you're just a year apart. Only the eldest child in the family can take part in the festivities as a token of respect for our brothers and sisters. Guests are important too. If there are guests at a Cherkasian event, no matter how old they are, they occupy a place of honour. The first dance in the kafa involves the event organisers, or rather, the people who are the reason for the celebration. It's like an introductory dance, yet the most prestigious dance is second, the dance of the highest-ranking guests, which is followed by dances with all the other guests. The celebration doesn't stop until they've all had a turn. The last dance, again, is the dance of the hosts, such as the family or the village where the event is being held. People say, a guest must never dance last in the kafa. That would be disrespectful. So I'd just like to talk a bit about the Ouj dance. I saw it, it's very different to the kafa. Can you describe the main movements, please, and what they're meant to convey both to the audience as well as to the dancers themselves? The Ouj is another very popular dance. It's the only dance where a young man is allowed to touch a girl with his hands. He can take her by the hand lightly, like this. If he does it like this, it would be a disgrace, a crime, a taboo. The Ouj is the last closing dance at a Cherkasian festival. The meaning of the Ouj is about the unity of all those present. The Adigs believe that they are children of the sun. So Adigs and Cherkasian dances incorporate this magic circle. When doing the Ouj, couples hold hands as they move in a large circle towards the sun.
And why is it only during this dance that the male dancers and female dancers can make physical contact between each other?
It's a more simple dance. The movements are simpler and more natural, allowing dancers to improvise. The Ouj allows male dancers to pick partners according to their liking, choose the girls they fancy, and hold their hands as they dance. Here, young people can meet, get to know each other, take stock of each other, if you will.
Very romantic. Thank you.
The kafa seems to serve the same purpose. It allows young people to meet and take a good look at each other. But the kafa is more like a performance where a history of feelings and relationships is veiled with restraint. The uj is more straightforward and open. Dancers can even chat a little while they're moving in a circle. That's allowed.
Well, thank you so much for deciphering the Caucasian dances for me. It was fascinating.
You're very welcome. The addicts will dance the kafa for as long as they live.
Superb. Thank you. ♪